Ahoy, ahoy. Welcome, everyone, to episode 12.5 of Boobs, Blades, and Body Art. I'm combining the name now. Ladies' Guide to Nerddom. I am your lovely host as ever, Becca, joined by the always lovely
Becky.
And today, it's the day that everyone's been intrigued and interested and amused by. Becky is going to try and convince me that Tolkien wasn't a very good author.
Yeah.
Because for those who don't know, for anyone who can't tell from just talking or looking at me, I am a very big Tolkien fan. I have read probably nearly everything he's written, and I grew up reading it all. So now Becky's going to see if she can smash all of that.
I don't want to smash it per se. It's more just, I think he gets a little bit more credit for the stuff that he's done, because you get a lot of people going, oh, well, he's the grandfather of fantasy, blah, 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 blah. And
yeah, you say that, but a lot of things wouldn't exist if he hadn't written those books.
That's true. And I don't want to take that away from him. I think also
there's other authors out there who get way more credit than they should. I have a personal problem with H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
So,
but like, I think in particular Tolkien is just one of those ones that really like niggles at me, especially when one of the points that I will be bringing up later is his way that he describes certain things, and I get a lot of people going, oh well, you're just too lazy to read it. I'm not too lazy to read it. I tried my hardest to read all the words in all those books. I'm not the problem here.
No, I'll react to that when we get to that point.
Yeah.
So, Becky has laid out her points for you, for me to look at, and it's really amusing. I can't wait to get to some of them. I am interested to see what some of them mean.
Most of them are like one word, so.
There's quite a few that are one word. The word fucking appears twice, and there's only one question mark. So, let's see how we go. So, start with your not a storyteller.
Yeah, so, for me, when I've read his books, and obviously I did a lot of like cliff note reading because I just couldn't read his actual work. And the one thing that I found in particular was that he creates worlds, and he's very good at that. I'm not going to take that away from him. He is amazing at creating a world, creating a scene. Beautiful. But the story? Oh boy. That story is, the reason it's in three books is because he builds a world. If you actually...
If you break down the story, so your hero has the MacGuffin and has to get MacGuffin to said place to destroy it.
Yes, and then go back home.
I mean, he nearly doesn't, but yeah, then he goes back home again.
Yeah, but
you just don't like that as a story.
Well, it's not that. Like, every story, when you have, like, an adventure or you're going... You're meant to go along with them, and most people don't tend to go home at the end of these adventure stories. Like, you're always constantly on an adventure with them, whereas he just goes home.
That they went home at the end.
Because it just ends. He just...
No, it doesn't.
Goes home.
He doesn't. Frodo goes home. Sam goes and gets the family that he always wanted. So you're saying you're sad that Sam, the true hero of those books, Samwise Gamgee, all he wanted was to marry Rosie Cotton. And he gets that, and you're sad because he didn't go on adventure.
The true hero is never actually meant to be Samwise. It's meant to be the other guy who's...
Frodo Baggins.
Yes, Frodo is the one that we're following. It's his story.
It's his story, but you don't have to be the hero of your story.
I mean,
you want to be the hero of your story.
It's pretty much set up to be that he's the hero.
I think that very much is dictated on how you read that book. I never took Frodo as the hero of those books. I took Sam as the hero of the books. Sam and Aragorn are the two strongest characters, and their stories run alongside. They both have to overcome struggles and deal with things almost similarly. Whereas Frodo, the second Frodo picked up the ring at Rivendell, that was where Frodo's story kind of ended.
Yes.
Because he was no longer himself. That was when the ring started taking hold of him. That's when it started corrupting him. And from the second he picked it up at Rivendell and became a ring bearer, he was never going to get his happy ending, because he doesn't. He has to die. Mm-hmm. He goes to the Undying Lands. So from that second on, the story was he was just the holder. He did things, and a lot of the time he was an asshole. And that is why I would say Frodo's not the hero. He's not a hero, he's the holder. He allows everyone else to do the things they needed to. So I never took Frodo as the hero of the books. I always thought Sam and Aragorn.
The thing that I have with that, though, is that it would have been, like, so much better to me if it was more that Frodo was the narrator, almost. You know, it was, this is the story, rather than, you know, this is the story of my friend Samwise and how he was great. Like, obviously not quite that, like, you know, but, like, you know, I would have much rather have delved further into those stories rather than going, ah, yes, this is a tree.
Yeah, but the thing is Lord of the Rings are a closed set of books. They're great. He wrote those. He spent ages on those. You can tell because he spent working out maps, languages, family lineages. He spent a long time working everything out to write those books. And that is why you have all the other books that exist. So you have the Silmarillion, the Lost Tales, the Unfinished Tales, all those stories. And all those stories, if you want one, you can probably go find out what happened to random Bob, who was mentioned once. Because he gave us so much information. I never really had a problem with how the story was written, how it was done. I quite liked it. Because the idea was, is you followed their story. But if it was just from Frodo's point of view, so him telling the story, he wouldn't have been able to tell you what Aragorn got up to, what Legolas, what Gandalf. You wouldn't have had all that stuff. And if you take it out, if you take all of that side of the story out, and you, like, imagine watching the films, but you could only watch the Sam and Frodo bits.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing where it would be more like he was the narrator of the story rather than he was the actual, like, it was just from his point of view. If you, like, I don't know if I'm describing it well, but, like, you know.
So you'd like the idea of him telling the story, not necessarily from his point of view, but him telling you the events of the One Ring.
Yeah, rather than having him in particular be in the story, because like you say, once he gets hold of the ring, which I mean, yeah, his character is pretty much dead in the water, and it doesn't he doesn't progress from there, but he does, like, he's still there.
As I said, I think the Frodo, the person you meet who's running around, who's all mischievous, once he officially becomes a ring bearer, that Frodo dies and you just have Frodo the ring bearer. Again, people may disagree with me, other people might not agree with my viewing, but
yeah,
that's the thing, that's the beauty of books. People take different bits appeal to different people. And the thing with the structure of the book, there are, again, there's like 90 books I've tried to read where I can't get along with the structure either. So I'm never going to begrudge, like, fucking Game of Thrones book. The first book, I've tried to read that so many fucking times, I can't get along with it. That seems really weird, given that I really like reading Lord of the Rings books, but I just don't like the way that one's structured.
Yeah.
So I can completely get behind not having a structure of a book make it really difficult.
Yeah. The really interesting thing as well is that when he was originally writing these books, it was meant to be one book.
Yes, it was.
The reason it got split into three was because it was such a niche thing. And, you know, I give him full credit for that. What he's done is created a whole world with a whole language. And, you know, that's a hell of a lot of work. And I think that the fact that it did get split into three books makes the story just feel a little stale, because it does go on and on and on. Rather than it being one book, he's had to stretch it out across three when you can tell it's not meant to be.
No. Like, because if he tried to condense the stories, there'd have been part that, like, this is from his as a creator. When you create something and you want to put everything in, you can't quite. And that is mm-hmm. why we have the whole other stuff that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the stuff he took out.
Yeah.
I think if he'd carried on taking out stuff from The Lord of the Rings that he wanted, and mm-hmm. that was how he narrowed it down to those three as his vision, he was happy with them. And I think if he'd carried on taking out stuff, he'd have taken out maybe moments that are really nice that you wouldn't have had.
Mm.
And you'd have had little tender moments in those books that were quite necessary that probably wouldn't survive like an editor today. But like, yeah. Why is this random touching moment going on when they're going off to battle? Sod that, get rid of it. So I like the fact that he got to keep so much stuff in. Even when I was a kid and I read it for the first time, I never had a moment where I was like, oh, when are we going to get back to this? When are we going to get back on this?
Mm.
I was intrigued the whole time. It never waned my attention, which is very impressive for when I was a child, because if anyone's met me, they know my attention span is terrible.
The thing is, like, because he didn't write it as three books. It was, he had written it as a single book.
Mm-hmm.
So he did have one single book, whether yep. it was this big, that big, that I'm showing.
Yes, she's showing, like, it's a doorstop. How, interestingly, you know, like, because I always call them doorstop books, the books mm-hmm. that always look a little intimidating to read, because that's what yeah. Lord of the Rings would have been if he'd kept it in one book. I think he broke it down also to make it quite a little bit more manageable. With doorstop books, I've read a few. I've got, you know, a couple up on my shelves. And I've read them, and you can tell when someone's had to go back and split it, mm-hmm. it gives them, well, actually, no, this is a very, very good, nice point to end a story and then pick it up again. It makes you kind of stop and reread yourself. Like, I'd love it if someone had done that for Stephen King. As a man who does not know not how to write a doorstop, I don't care how much cocaine he's on, someone take his pen away. Because if you want a real hard read doorstop book, look at the size of it,
mm.
the book, and yeah.
Yeah, it's got clowns in it. I'm not going to be going anywhere near that one.
That's true. Yeah. The Stand, that's got no clowns in it.
Okay.
That one is in fact longer.
Yes. But yeah, okay, so we're not going to agree on this point then.
Nope, that's fine. So that's, do you want to fine. Go on to your next point? I love the title of the next point.
The next point is just called Christian, because many people might not be aware, but Tolkien was a Christian.
Yep.
I mean, he was friends with C.S. Lewis, so of course he was.
Who was way worse than he was.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're both
You
bad.
Want a Jesus allegory, you go read the Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah. Yep. They are both pretty bad with the Christian whole thing. But the really interesting and like kind of weird thing with the Tolkien books, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's so necessarily a negative point, but it's not a positive point either.
It's just a point. Okay, so what
it's
is
just a point?
Just the point.
Yeah. But he writes as a Christian, letting other Christians know that he is also a Christian. He's not trying to go, hey, you're not a Christian, you should come be a Christian. But there is parts of it where he's just like, hey, you're a Christian. Yeah, so am I.
Christianity. I think with that, yeah, no, I get what you mean, because there are way worse offenders than he is.
There are, yeah.
And that's fine. There are also way worse people who put things in like, ha-ha, I'm a Christian, therefore I'm better than you.
Yeah.
Because I've never been a particularly religious person. I had read those books numerous times before I even realised. I was like, hey, wait, that's a kind of Christian thing. So, I mean, I didn't care that he's a Christian. I'm not
mm-hmm.
myself. So, I think I'm pleased. It made him happy. He was, because he was a religious guy. He valued his religion. And you can't take, you know, be like, oh, I have to take this part of myself out of this, because mm-hmm. no, he put his whole self into writing those books, so taking that part of himself out of them would have been quite bad, or probably would have been bad for the story. It would have made it weird, because he was trying to pick and choose bits of himself. But I'm pleased that how much he put in, because yeah, he didn't go overboard like others, and he didn't try and force himself to keep it out.
Yeah,
because you can read Lord of the Rings and not know he was Christian. You can read Lord of the Rings, know he's Christian, and go, ah, that's okay. I can see a little bit there. But it doesn't impact your reading. You don't feel excluded. You don't feel anything like that for his religion.
Yeah. For me, it's kind of like almost godlike from his point of view. You know, God was able to, as speaking from a Christian ethos, you know, God created the world. And then he comes along and, oh, I've created a world, to the point where he does need to go in and make his own language that can be deciphered and talked and written and so many other things. And it's like, where does that level end? Like, where do we split the two?
Do you know what I'd say? The whole going in, you are the god of what you create.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying otherwise.
A, there's people who've created way worse things. But he went in and, yeah, he loved languages. He was all about, so he was gonna make languages. He made, I don't know how many, he made the how to speak them, how to write them, what they looked like, the fancy alphabets, and then probably made three different versions of the damn things. Because, again, he was a little bit of a perfectionist.
Yes.
I never saw... That was a weird noise my body just made.
I say, that wasn't really a
negative or a positive.
Yeah, it's just kind of a point.
It was just something was that just, was there.
Yeah, and it doesn't sit right with me, but it doesn't make me feel negative at the same time. Like, it just makes me feel indifferent about him. Like, I felt anything about him anyway. But,
I love hearing about him and C.S. Lewis, because they were friends. They would go down the pub together and they would have these big debates about
theological debates.
And it's wonderful to hear about them, because shockingly, C.S. Lewis was a bit more into Jesus than Tolkien was.
Yeah.
And therefore, Tolkien would always argue on the other side, which is why it's so interesting that he was a Christian when he was always playing devil's advocate for the other side. When talking with C.S. Lewis.
Yeah.
And that probably made... That is probably why in the book it is a little more objective. But I think you can read those books without having to think, oh, well, this is written by a man who was a practicing Christian. I mean, you shouldn't really have to think about someone's religion when you go and read a book. I don't do it with any of my other books, really. I mean, there are some people... I mean, as I said, C.S. Lewis, H.P. Lovecraft, you can't escape their religions.
Yeah.
There are other worse examples of people who I don't want to talk about, but I think you can read Tolkien without having to worry that he's going to tell you off for not being a Christian.
Yeah, and I think that is the thing. Like, he does keep his... He does keep his, like, fairly closed off, but it's just, again, like I say, it was just a point that made me feel not the most comfortable. But yeah, we will move on.
Can I just ask, did you read the Chronicles of Narnia books as a kid?
Yeah, I couldn't get into them either.
Did that not sit? Because that was the one that I had. I couldn't... I was like, ooh, this is...
Yeah.
I think I made it through The Magician's Nephew and The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and I gave up.
As somebody who was brought up as a Christian and somebody who attended church, I couldn't get through the Chronicles of Narnia because... there was too much Jesus.
You were like, this is like, I deal with this on my weekends. Why am I doing this as my relax? Exactly. Whereas I was not. I had my gran who was a religious lady. My grand was a religious man. I meant to call him a religious lady. my mum was very indifferent, but, you know, was like, you should expose yourselves to all different religions. And I never really settled on one when I was a kid. I was like,
yeah.
It's not for me. And so, but I could see it in C.S. Lewis. I was like, this is Jesus. I know what this is.
Yeah. Like, especially with The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that one just really, like, clinches the deal on that one.
Like, for anyone who didn't realise this, please go back and look at those stories and go, oh.
Maybe we should have a mini-sode talking about C.S. Lewis. That's going to go well.
Maybe we should. That would be fun because I like complaining about C.S. Lewis. He was a prick. Anyway, onwards, because the next one is our first fucking... I want to read this one out because I love how she's worded this one. What I have written in front of me is Tom fucking Bombadil with bullet points after each. Just that was why I was enunciating it like I do. So Becky, I understand you're a big fan of Tom Bombadil.
Yeah, I absolutely love him, and his inclusion in the book is just so worth it and doesn't detract from the story at all.
Okay, so why do you hate Tom Bombadil?
Because he just doesn't
he's too happy for you, is he?
I'm called happy all the time. I am, according to some people, I'm the happiest person they've ever met.
And they've not
read
Tom
Lord
Bombadil.
Of the Rings. So, but Tom Bombadil, I feel, because I know that he did get another book, short story written about him, like The Adventures of Tom Bombadil or something. Yeah.
He also had a poem before Lord of the Rings was written.
Yeah.
Tom Bombadil existed.
Yeah. And I feel like he was just kind of put into the book because he felt like he should go in there. There was no reason for him to be where he was. There was not unless you really, really break it down. And then we start to include the theories about whether or not the Christianity was actually further into the story than we realised. If you are just reading it from I am a reader's point of view, he just fucking shows up out of nowhere.
Tom Bombadil, for me, I always liked him. I found him charming. And I always saw Tom Bombadil as Sauron's opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone, whether or not they realise it in those stories, basically has an opposite.
Yeah.
For every nice Aragorn, there's an asshole. Mm-hmm. For every nice Sam, there is, I don't know, Gollum. And so you need a big bad to have an opposite. And you don't get Tom Bombadil in the films. I think they're kind of replacing him with Galadriel almost. Mm-hmm. But Tom Bombadil is one of the most powerful and amazing characters in Lord of the Rings, to the point the ring can't corrupt him.
Yeah.
He could, when you saw Gandalf go to take it and it would have corrupted him, would have corrupted Galadriel, Tom Bombadil can just pick that up and be like, nah, I don't want that shit. Because he is, for all the evil Sauron is, Tom Bombadil is good.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore he is, that's why I always joke that he is just so happy, because for all the misery guts that Sauron is, he's always being nice. Which is why I liked as well, you had the opposites in the way the characters looked. He's nice and colourful and bright, loves nature. He's always surrounded by plants and trees.
Yeah.
You have Sauron, who's all dour and dark and lives surrounded by death and fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like when I read the books and when you're younger, Tom Bombadil's just kind of a nice character because he's silly. Yeah. But when I went back and I was older and I read them and I read all the stuff surrounding the stories... And you read The Adventures of Tom Bombadil, you read the poems, because God, Tolkien loved his poems, so I'll give him that.
Oh,
God's sake, that man likes writing a lot of poetry.
Three chapters worth of it.
Yes, he did. And songs. I loved all the songs. And you kind of got to appreciate that Tom Bombadil's been around for so long, but he's still that nice. He still wants everyone to succeed. He knows he can't help everyone because he's just one person, but he encourages and he's nice and he wants, and he kind of always knows. It's almost like he knows. He's like, no, you guys carry on, you've got good things ahead of you. And I think without, if Sauron didn't have an opposite for, I don't mind it in the films, because I know Tom Bombadil exists. I like to think that he's scurrying around in the background somewhere. I think they wouldn't have I think if you tried to put him in the films, people would have had a hard time with him.
Yeah.
Because he's not someone that would translate to the film very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been it would have been a detriment to those films to put him in it. So I don't. Yeah. That's why when those came out, I wasn't like, "Where's my Tom Bombadil?" but I didn't mind because I knew he existed, and it would have taken a lot to explain.
Yeah.
Who and what he was and how everything happened with him.
Yeah, it would have taken another film just to explain Tom Bombadil. Because and it took three chapters and nobody still understands who the fuck Tom Bombadil is.
He's the opposite of Sam. I like him. You're not going to change my mind on liking Tom Bombadil. I will sing you Tom Bombadil's song.
I do not need to hear the goddamn Tom Bombadil song. I understand having a character be introduced, blah, 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 blah. What you do not need is three whole chapters of non-stop poetry / rhyming couplets. That is not what I need in a story. Even if that character
talks
like that.
You need in your story.
Even if your character talks like that. But the entire thing, like, instead of it being like, you know, oh, and here is that glorious tree. It's tree and bee and all the way through Tom Bombadil's
bits. Are we combining the next point by any chance?
No, not yet. I was just pointing out a rhyming because I saw my next point and...
Yeah, so you thought, let's go with a tree, let's go with the tree.
Yeah, and I figured it was an easy one to rhyme with because I can't think of anything to rhyme with Bombadil. Except Advil, which I need after spending 5 minutes talking about Tom Bombadil.
Well, should we move away from Tom Bombadil? If you
can, I just say one more thing.
I don't want to fry Becky's brain.
You know how God rest his soul, rest in peace. We all love him, but do you know how Stan Lee would just appear in the movies, and he brought literally nothing to the like. Except a little bit of enjoyment. You know, you were like, oh.
He brought some humour.
Yeah.
And adorableness. And also heavily implied he works with the Watchers. So I love that as canon.
Yes. But like, you know how he was just kind of there because he wanted to be there? That's the impression that you get with Tom Bombadil. That is who Tom Bombadil is. Tom Bombadil is Lord of the Rings version of Stanley.
It would be Tolkien. I don't think. He would have written Stan Lee in. that'd have been weirder if he'd written Stan Lee in. But, so you're saying that that's the self-insert character? Because there are so many authors who are guilty of self-insert characters. I don't think Tom Bombadil really is the self-insert character for him. Simply because of how joyous and how happy he is. Mm. Tolkien was famously quite a curmudgeonly miserable sod. I think Tom Bombadil allowed Tolkien to do something charming, A, for his children, because he loved putting in characters for his kids. And also, as I mentioned and as you've gathered, Tolkien loved a bit of poetry.
Yeah, and but the thing with that
imagine
is...
Imagine if Sam was the one that spoke in poetry.
The entire book would have been burnt. Because that's too many chapters in poetry.
It's been interesting.
But the thing is with that, like, I know that Tom Bombadil is an incredibly joyful, cheerful character. And so, you know, you can't go, oh, well, he doesn't fit because Tolkien was a miserable sod. But Bombadil is also one of those characters who just does not seem to have, like, any regard for the continuity of time or... No. Space or anything. So he's like almost godlike with his powers, you know. And, you know, like you said, he doesn't get distracted, like influenced by the ring. He doesn't turn invisible. None of this stuff happens to him. So he is the ultimate god character. Even, you know, I've got Odin in my head and I know it's not Odin.
Sauron?
No, the good one. Gandalf.
Gandalf.
Yes.
Okay. Gandalf is the good. Gandalf's not the opposite. Again, I think this is why.
Oh, I'm not saying he's the opposite. I'm just saying that Gandalf also turned. So he's as though, like, you know, he is the wizard. He is the one with the magic, etc. But then you have Tom Bombadil, who is just above all of that. Like, that's what I mean by him inserting himself in.
if Tolkien put any part of himself into a character, it probably was Tom Bombadil. I'll give you that. Because Tom Bombadil was created before Lord of the Rings was. The idea that he's been around for all this time. And again, I think it works with the... Again, people might not agree with my theory of that he works nicely as the opposite to Sauron. I think that is the thing. Because you said it kind of links to almost your Christianity point. That, you know, for the good, you must have a bad. And the good must remain outside and objective.
Yeah.
Because it can't always intervene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Tom Bombadil is. He's the good that wants to help but can't always intervene in what's going on with the bad.
Yeah.
I want to know what this tree is.
Okay, so we'll move on to that one.
Because the next one is that one fucking tree. We've got two fuckings back to back.
This is where I give up reading the first Lord of the Rings book. Because we had just left the Shire and we just met Tom Bombadil. And at this point, I was about two thirds of the way through the book, maybe about halfway through the book. Yep. And I'd still only just left the Shire. I hadn't even gotten onto the rest of the bloody story yet.
Yep, and then we
stop underneath this tree where we sit and we talk about a tree for what feels like 100 bloody years. And it's one tree, but that one tree, you've never seen a tree like that before. And that forest, that tree in that forest, you've never seen a tree like that forest in that tree and that foresty tree. And there's so much about a one single tree.
Are you saying he's a little overly descriptive here with the tree?
Yes. Stops. My next point is kind of like included in this one.
I was gonna say, do you want to include the next one? He was a big fan of his
flowery writing.
He loved writing. He loved describing things.
Yes.
Which I will not take away from him. You probably one of the few books where you will read a page and you will have in your head what he had in his head when writing that page.
Yeah.
Because he likes to describe everything. He loved nature. That was a huge thing for Tolkien. Mm-hmm. He was a massive naturalist. I got it right that time. I was talking to someone yesterday and I mixed up naturalist and naturist. Yeah. And I was like, no, Tolkien was not a naturist. He was a naturalist. but yeah, he was a naturalist. So he did love describing trees.
Yeah.
He did love describing flowers. I would say again, for all the... Yeah, he would do a page that was kind of unnecessary of description.
Mm-hmm.
But you ever read H.P. Lovecraft?
No, because
that man was paid by the word and it shows.
That's the thing as well, though. Like, you know, you say we don't like to read H.P. Lovecraft because he is paid by the word. But again, Tolkien was the same. He wrote, like, so unnecessary descriptions. And it's kind of... So, instead
Why
of him...
Why do you say they're unnecessary descriptions?
Because... if you are sat there and you have seen a forest, everybody has seen a forest somehow.
But you've not seen that forest.
But the way he describes it doesn't technically, like... You can't picture the exact foresty type thing that he has in his mind. You're never going to be able to. You might feel like
he's
going
to give you the best shot to, because that's what he was doing.
But you don't need to have that much in there. You can create his world. He can create his world outside of these books, like he did. I don't think it needs to be a 10-page description about a tree. At which point, there is a full page in which he is describing this tree, and there is not a single full stop until the very end of the page. It is all just semicolons and colons and commas. That is not a sentence.
You also have the thing here with Bombadil, because this is all Bombadil's part as well. He is all about nature.
Mm-hmm.
So if any character was going to sit and get someone to appreciate nature, it's going to be Bombadil.
Mm-hmm.
Bombadil is also showing the fragility and the natural world, because after that point, they're not going to see and sit and look at the trees.
Yeah.
That's something they can never do. And it's kind of nice because you have almost a slight reference to it. Do you remember the trees? When they've just got out of Mount Doom. And I don't remember the trees. I don't remember the taste of bread. It's that tree. It's them appreciating for a moment. And if you ever sit in front of a forest and a tree and you just try and explain to someone perfectly the tree that you're looking at, you're never going to get it exactly, like you said. No one will ever see what you saw, but he's going to give you your damnedest point to imagine as much as he wants. Tolkien wasn't a person who was writing for children. That's easy to tell, especially with Lord of the Rings. Read The Hobbit if you're writing for children, because that was written for children. He wasn't going to hold back in his description in his language in a book that was designed more for adults.
Mm-hmm.
So I will never hold against him.
The thing is, though, like...
It's not
the first time that he describes this tree, or trees in general, and you get to a point where it's just... You have described this tree that you're going to refer back to, and yeah, that's fine. You do not then need to describe every single scene on your way. For example, in The Two Towers, you can go look this up for anybody who wants to. It's chapter 2, The Riders of Rohan. It says, "A little way beyond the battlefield, they made their camp under a spreading tree. It looked like a chestnut, and yet it still bore many broad brown leaves of a former year, like dry hands with long splayed fingers. They ratted mournfully in the night breeze." Why do we care? Like, how many people have even seen a chestnut tree to imagine in their head right then, I wonder if that looks like a chestnut tree or not. Like, you then have to stop and think.
If you took the description of it might be a chestnut tree out of it, would you have anything else problem with that sentence?
Let's see.
So take out the reference to it being a chestnut tree.
That one not so much, because that is just a very, very like short sentence.
No, that's fine, but that's the perfect idea.
Yeah,
is that this is a sentence if you take out chestnut tree, but adding chestnut tree doesn't take away from that sentence, because all it means is if you know what a chestnut tree looks like, you know what those leaves that are rattling look like. If you don't, it's a type of tree.
Yeah, but like the problem that I have with it is it destroys his sense of flow and the focus. Because he's describing a single feature in very long sentences, because that was a one sentence. That whole thing that I read out was one sentence.
He loved his words.
And the habit that he created with these one long sentences and incredibly long descriptions, he removes the emotion and excitement and ruins the urgency of a scene by diverting the reader's attentions to details that distract from the character's actions rather than enhancing them.
I would disagree. Because, again, when I read it, I was never distracted from the characters. What it did for me was create a scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be reading... I've read that sentence, I've read that page, that chapter numerous times, and all it does for me is it sets it up. It gives you actually kind of an ominous, because he's talking about it's rattling in the wind, seasons past, will it see a second season pass? Because this is why I'm saying all he does is world build, and he is the master of world building.
You
will not find an author who spent more time creating more meticulously a world. And to take out his descriptions takes out his world building. Because this is how, you know, if you wrote a story and you had described things, including the surround, because if you don't describe the surround, what people are sitting near, what people are walking past, what the world looks like, then your world isn't very nice, because I have nothing to imagine with. I want a little bit, and Tolkien will make sure that you have as much information as possible to imagine this world he created. And I like that. I'm someone who, you know, I don't like normally overly wordy books. I definitely didn't when I was younger, but that was one that I didn't mind, which really didn't make sense to my mum. She was like, why the hell do you like these ones? And if I took out the descriptions or took out parts of the description, so like saying taking out chestnut doesn't detract from that sentence, but doesn't, you don't enhance it really.
Mm-hmm.
But if I took it out, that's taking out part of what he wanted you to read, he wanted you to imagine. If you don't know what a chestnut tree is, maybe you'll go look up what a chestnut tree is, or you won't, because who actually goes and looks up a random tree that they've read in a book? But if you do, then you have that much greater of an image. And if you went back and read them after you found out about what a chestnut tree was, I know I'm really focusing on it being a chestnut tree,
yeah,
but it's just for being pernickety, then it might mean that, you know, he had a specific sound in his head and he knew that that was a sound when he'd sat under a chestnut tree. That
I think the thing for me in particular, because for those who don't know, I have the word that has left my head.
I don't want to say words in case I make you lose track more.
Aphantasia.
Ah.
Which means that I cannot visualize things in my head. I cannot close my eyes and look, you know, and you're describing something to me, let's say you're describing Tolkien's Bloody Forest, you say those words at me and they're just empty words because I can't picture it, I can't imagine it. So when I think that is my biggest issue with Tolkien, is he has catered his books to a very specific audience and hasn't created enough of a like world around it where you can skip those bits. It's why I prefer the movies to the books, honestly, because I can see the world. I don't need to think about it because I can see it. They may miss out a lot of the story, but I can at least see it. And I don't have these descriptions that last for 300 pages. And
I think that's the thing. He is a very, very descriptive person.
Yeah.
And if you don't really, you know, if you have something that means you can't really visualize something in your head, then you have pages of stuff where it means nothing to you.
Yeah.
And that will taint your view of something. If you can't do something that the author is kind of almost counting on you to do.
Yeah.
Then it's going to make you kind of not want to read them, not enjoy them. And that is, you know, that's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say probably Tolkien didn't consider that, but
probably not. But I think
probably not. But he was writing a book that he wanted to write. When you make something, you make it for you, almost.
I think in a way, though, that's also a negative with what you just said, though, because he relied on you to be able to create this world in your head. So he gave you all this information so that you could create his exact perfect vision of that world in your head, rather than giving perhaps a little bit more of a vague description, like a forest. Like, you know, when somebody says they were in a forest, obviously nobody writes like that, but, you know, there is obviously more description to it.
You've not read my latest book, The Forest.
But I can imagine, like, you know, I can't picture it, but I can kind of get the feelings of where they are and stuff like that. The incredibly long descriptions, obviously this is specifically for me, but that does make it a detriment because you're having to create this entire world and it takes so much energy from this that you then don't want to carry on with the rest of it.
Well, as I said, I like the descriptions because I do like creating the image. He gives you the pieces to create the world, but it's the world he's created previously. Mm-hmm. He's already pictured what the grass looks like. He's already pictured this annoying forest and a man created every... Probably, if you'd given him more time, he'd have told you exactly what type of tree every single one was, the species, the age, and roughly how long it had been there.
Yeah,
I realise that kind of counts as age, but...
you never know, it might have been planted by somebody.
Could have been moved. Maybe someone moved it at one point. Yeah. But I think he could have been worse, definitely, because if you read his other stuff, and mm-hmm. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say you haven't read his other stuff, he can be way more descriptive. Mm-hmm. I think probably, yeah, he gave you the stuff he wanted you to have to be able to picture the world he'd made.
Yeah.
Because that's what he wanted. He wanted you to see exactly what he saw when you read these books.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone who does have, like you, or struggle with just creating an image in their mind from a series of words, yeah, his books are not going to be that accessible.
Yeah.
Or they're going to be harder to get into because he does rely on you having the imagination he had.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. I will definitely wager that that man had one hell of an incredible imagination.
Yeah, he probably did.
And I don't imagine he thought his books would really get read by... Mm-hmm. In fairness, he never thought his books would be read by that many people. He had to be badgered into publishing.
Mm.
So the idea that he would think that there would be people today debating his books, he probably would be like, that's not going to happen. My books will be published and forgotten.
Yeah.
Let alone become the phenomenon they became. So I imagine that his writing is quite inaccessible because he never expected it to be what it became.
Mm. The thing is as well, like, so this is going to combine two or three different points because we have spoken about how I don't find him an actual storyteller and how his work is very flowery. You know, he's very descriptive.
Loves
except work. When you are talking about battles. And then we lose all description because Tolkien will literally, like, imagine it, listeners, because I can't say readers. Mm-hmm. Tolkien is sat there and he's got a tiny thin brush and he's marking out every single perfect little detail of his precious little world. And then you get to the characters and they're just kind of splodges on the page because, especially in the battles, the characters themselves, not so much, in the battle.
I would say there is almost a very simple reason for this. And it's what I imagined is Tolkien is an army man.
Mm-hmm.
He went through World War I and he was at the Somme. He saw the worst battle could ever give. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to spend time reliving that.
Mm.
He didn't want to spend his stories infinitely describing something that probably for him was very, very real in his head. He had seen his friends die next to him. He'd seen his enemy become mist.
Mm-hmm.
So when creating the battles he was and describing them, he was a little more objective. He stayed back out of the battles. He would never go into detail, but I think it would probably hit stopped him, or he wouldn't have finished if he'd tried to, because it would have affected him, because he was affected by what happened to him in the war. I don't think anyone who walked out of that war wasn't affected by it, particularly anyone who walked away from the Somme.
Mm-hmm.
So I think probably writing those battles, even though it's not fought with machine guns and fights, a battle's a battle, and that was a man who went through one of the worst. So I'd say he wouldn't have wanted to describe those battles because it was something he'd done, and he didn't like it. But he couldn't keep battles out of his stories because they were what to be... If you took the battles out of most fantasy novels, what happens? Kind of nothing.
Yeah.
If you've made this big enemy that needs defeating, you need to have battles to show that they will not back down. He wasn't afraid of war, he wasn't afraid of the things he'd seen, but probably he didn't want to spend a long time describing it.
Yeah.
So and he'd much rather talk of the beauty in the world than the sad.
I get that, and I understand that it was a very difficult thing for him, but at that point, I think you should consider hiring somebody or getting a friend to write with you, like C.S. Lewis.
Oh, because... God, I would have been so sad if C.S. Lewis had touched those books.
But, like, so this is from The Fellowship of the Ring, Chapter 5, The Bridge of Khazad-dûm. And the sentences go, how many there were, the company could not count. The affray was sharp, but the old... I'm going to start this again. My brain just did not know how to speak then.
It's fine. Go.
How many there were, the company could not count. The affray was sharp, but the orcs were dismayed by the fierceness of the defence. Legolas shot two through the throat. Gimli hewed the legs from under another that had sprung upon Balin's tomb. Boromir and Aragorn slew many.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
They weren't keeping count.
No, but like, it was just, you know, you say they weren't keeping count, but they were keeping count
it's
enough
the joke.
For Legolas to have shot two through the throat.
Well, the joke, Legolas and Gimli keep count of theirs.
Yeah, but
no one else does.
It just is the, like...
Well, okay, so in that scene, so I'm guessing the bit that you're not a big fan of is that the Aragorn and Boromir slew many.
Yes.
Okay, what would you rather he'd have done? Would you rather know how many they'd killed, or that they were in the action, that there were dead flying around them?
It's not even so much like, what would I change, or what would I like to know? Because, you know, for me, like, you know, Boromir and Aragorn slew many, that's fine. But that's okay. Fine if you're telling it as in they're in the pub and they're talking to their mates about it afterwards. But they're not. This is in the middle of a battle. So where is your battle scene? Where, I know you have said, you know, he obviously had the issues. But again, this is where you bring in somebody else to write it for you if you really cannot talk about those things. Because you're so good at this world building and world creation and getting your getting people to imagine these things, and
okay,
you don't put that same effort into describing a battle scene.
What I'd say is that you have they know how many, and then Aragorn slew many. I know that therefore they've killed a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, orcs are orcs. I don't care how many orcs they've killed. Mm-hmm. I want to now know what's going on. What's going to happen next? I am concerned about my characters because everyone's now, you know, there's fighting going on. Also, the thing I would say as well is for anyone who creates or anyone who's written a book, it's hard, especially to get someone to come in and write for you. For someone who is so, everything about himself is wrapped up in that book. That book was his world because mm-hmm. he put him whole self into it. The idea of having someone else come and say, oh no, well, I'll write this, it would have sounded so differently because it wouldn't have been him. Mm-hmm. And every part of that book, every description, as annoying as it is, every character with their ridiculously long family lineage, every world map that is annoyingly complicated, it was all of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the second he'd have brought someone else in to write those battle scenes, it would have stood out like a sore thumb because they wouldn't have been, they still wouldn't have been his way of describing things.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have been in the same style. They would have been someone else's style. And you've tried to read C.S. Lewis. His fight scenes are equally as annoying to try and read.
Yes.
Because his are very flustered. Mm-hmm. And the idea of suddenly having a very flustered fight in the middle of Lord of the Rings would have been annoying. I do not like that. I think with the battle scenes, he describes what you need to know what's going on, but everything should be going on so much. You can't take stock because it's battle. And he appreciated that. And I think the stuff that happens in Moria is very amazing and personal because particularly his descriptions of the Balrog, what happens with the Balrog, he based that on something he had happen.
Mm-hmm.
But he twisted it to fit into a fantasy setting. So this burning mass was now a sentient being that was coming to get them because that's how it felt.
Yeah.
But he's not going to spend ages rapidly describing the battle leading up to that point because he knows there's something big coming that mm-hmm. he wants to get to. So, yeah, he's going to spend, again, he loved his descriptions. He loved describing nature because that was what he was all about. Battle was not what he was all about, but he'd done it.
Yeah.
So he was trying to not linger on something that wasn't a very nice point to linger on for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting to the next point because he knows there's something exciting coming.
Yeah. And at that point, though, just... Again, this is where the he's not a storyteller comes into it. Because you could have spoken about that in a different way. it could have been described differently, not adding in more description of how brutal the battle was or anything like that. But, you know, the fast-pacedness of battle. People have seen battles, you know, they're not slow, they're not clunky. So the way he describes it kind of makes sense because, you know, they're fast-paced, they're going constantly. It's arrow here, arrow there, sword there. But when you have just spent an entire, like, chapter describing a tree, you can spend a little bit longer. Even if something is more exciting coming up, you can still spend a little bit longer. Describe what the battlefield looks like. You know, you want to be immersed in this world. And yet when we get to, yes, I know the battlefield is not a very nice place, but suddenly your description, your image has then fallen away, has it not?
Yes.
So you cannot view anything. And, you know, you've gone.
You're focusing.
But you're not focusing.
What he wants is you to imagine the big world, but as soon as the fight's going on, all you're invested in is that fight. If he suddenly starts telling you exactly what Balin's tomb looks like once a big axe has hit it, and he talks about the mist flaking and things like that, you'd have been kind of like, what? Why are we doing this, Tolkien? What's going on? Or if he'd set up as the orcs were running in and stopped for a page to describe the room they were in, and when they ran out of that room and then stopped and described that room for a little bit longer, it would have really made everything very stop-starty.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas he zoned in on the fight, because that's what you're reading.
Yeah.
You're reading the fight. You're focusing on, are these characters going to get out okay? Oh my god, there's overwhelming numbers coming in this enclosed area. So you know, as the fight goes on, you get little bits of description of what's going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know that people will be jumping off of things. You know that people are standing on things. You need to know that at the time, because that's when it's going on.
Yeah.
But probably these characters, if you're imagining that they're taking stock of something, if I have an imaginable amount of orcs running at me, I'm not going to stop and look around and see what I've got behind me.
But that's what he would do, though.
That's what he would do for the bits where they had the opportunity. You get these descriptions of nature. Again, he loved describing nature. That was something that he immensely enjoyed. So he's going to spend a little bit longer than maybe anyone, than he would have done normally if he wasn't obsessed with nature. So he wouldn't have described battle in the same way, because you wouldn't describe battle in the same way you'd describe a tree. You wouldn't describe a battle in the same way you would describe walking into a town. Because there are, you know, if I stopped to describe me going downstairs and making a cup of tea to me punching someone, I'm not going to talk about, oh, well, yes, I walked down the stairs and I turned on the kettle. I'm going to be like, I know, I hit a dude. You don't need the setup for my world around me for punching someone.
But it's not just that, though. Like, you know, okay, the world around you, maybe you don't need. But I mean, you don't need the world around you when you're talking about going into a town either, personally. But, like, there are things that you can tell about a person. They are going into this huge, epic battle. This is a battle, the big battle. How are they feeling? What's going on? Why, like, you know, what... Like, how are they acting before they see this? How are they reacting to this huge mass of orcs, more orcs than they've ever seen before, coming towards them in such a way? The way that, like, their feet are, like, thundering. You can feel it through the ground. Those are such powerful writing tools that give a person who has never been in a battle, who has never been on a field where people, where hundreds of people are running at them. I mean, you know this firsthand. You've been around when there are horses galloping, when there are people running. You can feel it through the ground. You have the adrenaline. That is great. Everybody, like, you read books about it. Everybody will describe that feeling because the adrenaline and the description of it is just so... It puts you in the middle, and he's just like, nah, you slew many.
Yeah. But I wasn't taken away from that battle by his description. I've read some really, you know, other stories that love getting into the nitty-gritty of battle and describing things like that. And not even describing, you know, viscerally them cutting legs off and stuff. But you do have that. You have Gimli slicing guys' legs. You have the description going on, and you have just a jux of... If he stopped to describe what Aragorn was feeling as he came in, that would be weird, because when you have a huge amount of people running at you, you're really not thinking. You are reacting to what is in front of you, because you don't have time to think. You have to go, I know what I'm doing, and you just do it. Boromir and Aragorn are soldiers. They've been fighting previously. So they're used to this. They know what to do. They've just kicked into to fight mode. They know what they're doing, even if they're not thinking. The fact that, so they wouldn't stop and think, they wouldn't stop and take stock. They know what they have to do and they're gonna do it. So they are just mowing people down, slaying many. If you want more on them, you go off and read the other stuff. But the showing of the description in that one, you aren't taken out of that battle. You don't feel disconnected. You know shit stuff's happening. You've got the nice, good descriptions with Legolas and what Gimli are up to, because they are taking it in more, because those two aren't as seasoned warriors. I mean, Legolas is more of a seasoned warrior because he's just so fucking old. but he's not done fighting like Aragorn and Aragorn and Boromir have. Those guys have been on war lines. Boromir has been fighting a battle most of his life because he borders Mordor. So the two characters who've done the least fighting get the descriptions because they're taking stock of it more. Whereas the guys who haven't, because they're just doing what they used to.
Yeah, but I think it's just incredibly lazy when you've spent so long describing that, then you can, you know, describing a tree that they've camped under, or another tree from back when, or how many breakfasts a hobbit has to eat. I think that you can just put in a little bit more description of the feelings. Like you say, you wouldn't go into Boromir and Aragorn because they're just on autopilot. But the others aren't.
Yeah. And you've got more of a description.
But the you got more of a description isn't really much more of a description, because you got Gimli hewed the legs from under another that had sprung upon Balin's tomb. You get more about the other guy than you do from Gimli, because all Gimli did was cut the legs off, whereas what we know about the other guy is that he jumped up and was on Balin's tomb.
Yeah, but you're not going to be reading that one sentence and then stopping for the day. You're going to read the next page. You're going to read the next two pages. You don't stop in the middle of a fight to read when you're reading. You don't stop just as the fighting is starting. It's setting up the fighting starting. If his descriptions were all of the fight just went, they killed some people, then yeah, that's really lazy.
But that is the pinnacle of the fight, though. You know, like, not the pinnacle, but that is the starting point of the fight. This is where you can describe, like I said, the orcs running at them, the thundering of the feet on the ground, the vibrations that it puts through the field. You put that into the middle of the field, into the middle of the battle story, and it's lost its edge, because now you're all running anyway. Like, it doesn't matter. So it's lost its edge. You need the stuff like that. You need the feelings and the stuff like that at the beginning, because otherwise you've lost the impact that it will have on the reader.
But it didn't lose impact for me.
That's for you.
But this is the thing. Reading a book is personal.
Mm.
I will never read a book the same way you read a book. I will never read a book the way as someone in the street reads a book. No one ever reads the book the same way someone else does, which is why I find recommending people books very difficult, because I will always take away a little something from a book, a story, than someone else will. Reading is personal. And I'm never gonna, that's why I will never tell someone they've read a book wrong. You can't read a book wrong. I've tried to read books and I haven't been able to get along with them, and I've been told I'm reading them wrong. And I'm like, no, I'm not. So I will never begrudge someone for not liking Tolkien, shockingly. I understand he loves his flowery language. I know this. But it has never taken me out of those stories. I reread these books. I still do. And I will probably reread that point, and I might linger on it a little bit more. But I will also have all the setup around it now. Because there is something for taking a quote out of a book. Because you don't have X number of chapters that you've read before that, and the X number of chapters that come after that. Because he didn't intend you to read this a line, then go away, then read a line, then go away. He wanted you to read it all together. And yeah, whenever you read his fights, you do have to appreciate that this is a man who'd not long come out of a war that was, was the first war that was a global war and was some of the most vicious fighting these people had ever fucking seen. And did it help inspire these books? Did help inspire the struggles, the fights, the forming of friendships? And you can see that. I know that his fights aren't that descriptive, but I still created a wonderful image in my head when I read them. I could still be invested in Gimli standing on that tomb, sweeping out those legs.
Nah, it's not Gimli standing on the tomb, it's the other dude who was just killed.
Jumped up on the tomb, anyway. Wrong way around.
Yeah.
But he never felt like he would over-describe certain things, under-describe others. But I never felt taken out of the fights. As much as he loved describing those trees, you do read the stories for the action scenes. But you could read that whole fight and I'd still be invested. That's the thing. And this is why, almost to say that this whole discussion is kind of pointless, because I'm never going to read the book the same way you did. Or tried to. And I'm never going to make you read the book the way I did.
Yeah.
Because that's not how reading works.
And with this discussion, I appreciate the points that you've made. And I think that anybody else who is listening to this cannot tell me that any of my points are incorrect. Because they're right.
I've never said
true.
That the points you've made are incorrect.
Yeah.
I'm not going to begrudge you for disliking Tom Bombadil. I know plenty of people that don't like Tom Bombadil. I still like him. I know there are other storytellers out there, but there's probably books that I don't really enjoy reading that probably you do. And you're not going to tell me off for not, you read them wrong. And that's not the point. The whole joke of this is, would she convince me, would she not?
Yeah.
It's not, because she's not actually trying to convince me that he's not a good author. She's explaining
why I don't like him
as an author.
And that's
fair
enough.
I'm explaining why I do like him as an author. Yeah. And just basically, it's almost like we did it to convince people to listen slightly.
There is one last point, though.
Oh, yes,
this one's interesting, because I'm not the only one who doesn't think that Tolkien is a bad author.
Nope.
The people who... Oh, gosh, my voice went in. The people who sit on the committee for the Nobel Prize also do not think that Tolkien was a very good author. He was nominated by his friend C.S. Lewis. And the criticism that Tolkien got from the panelists was that Tolkien has not in any way measured up to storytelling of the highest quality. And, this is, I'm not saying everybody now, you must not like Tolkien because the Nobel Prize people said so. But that's just you know, this is the point of it. And with the Nobel Prize now, you get like 300 plus entries a year. Back then, it was about 50. So they could spend a lot more time looking and reading these stories and having more of an opinion on them. And that is literally the only thing they said about him. The others all had many points. He just had... He's not measured up to the storytelling of the highest quality. Take that how you want.
Okay, how many times have you read a book because it won a Nobel Prize?
I mean, I don't read books based on Nobel Prizes. Nobody does. Point.
If anyone sits down and tells me, I read the books because they read Nobel Peace Prize or Nobel Prizes, I'm going to be like, are you okay? Do you need a hand? Are you doing all right? Because that is a stupid way to read books.
It is.
I mean, the guy who won that year, I can't tell you what his book was. I know it was in 1961. I know it was a guy called Ivo Andrić, I think his name was, that won that year. Can't tell you what the book was that won. I've probably never read it. I'm sure it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably was. It probably was a bit miserable too, because they really like picking miserable books. But anyone who's read a review of something, they know that people who review things, it's their opinion.
Yeah.
It happens to films all the time. Reviewers will put out a film, a review will come out, and they'll go, this is the worst piece of trash that has ever come out, and it will go on to be a phenomenon. It happened numerous times. It happened here. It doesn't mean the story isn't good. It doesn't mean that, you know, I'm trying to think of a really good one for films, because it's easier for me to remember films than books. What's that mean? I mean, Alien got panned when it came out. It got told that, and that, if I say Alien to people, everyone knows what that is.
Yeah.
But the reviewers didn't think it was very good. And so, it didn't win a Nobel Prize, but it's not lost out because of it. I don't know how well the guy whose book did win got out of winning the Nobel Prize. He might not have sold that many more copies.
Maybe not.
Might have not sold a single one after he won his prize. It's an opinion.
Yeah.
It's just a slightly loftier opinion.
Just made me giggle. But that was all.
I know. I find that shit funny. Yeah. And that's why I find looking at old reviews really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love seeing when people are like, this will never last. In fact, I found one not too long ago that said the internet was a passing fad.
So yeah, I love these reviews.
I love them because they age like milk.
Yeah.
And those ones are the best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Nobel Prize has probably passed on hundreds of books that people would rather read. But the way that they judge these books, they have a criteria.
Yeah.
And Lord of the Rings didn't fill it.
Yeah.
But whatever his name's book was, I feel bad that I can't remember the other guy's book. But
I mean, I couldn't even tell you who won the Nobel Prize last year, so you know.
I know, yeah, that's the thing. I have never really paid attention. I know Bob Dylan won it, tried to win it, nearly won it once and then turned it down. Yeah, that's a weird thought, right? He won it, I think, for literature. Because there's many different prizes for different things. I don't know. It makes no sense.
No.
But,
and we're going way off topic now.
Way off topic.
So, to conclude,
Tolkien did not suffer.
No. And I think to conclude this, obviously, this was never, will I convince Becca that Tolkien is a bad author? Because, like we've said, it's a my opinion thing. I think it's, in a way, it's good to be critical of your favourite authors sometimes. Yep. And it's good to look at it from another person's point of view. Like, why does that person not like a book? Why does that person like a book?
I can't stand people who only surround themselves with agreeing opinions.
Yeah.
If I see something that I don't agree with, I go find out the other side.
Yeah.
I will always make sure to have the maximum amount of information possible. I will give anyone the time of day. Fucking hell, once when I found out about flat earthers, I gave them the time of day. I went and had a look what their point of view was. It was fucking wrong, but I went and gave them a chance. You should never just have people or just look at the opinions that agree with you, because that's the worst thing you can do to yourself.
Yeah.
You should always give someone the opportunity to show you the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Just go and have a look. If you if you don't like something, well, okay, I'm never going to convince you to like something you don't like.
Yeah.
Becky will not convince me to like something I don't like. No one is going to suddenly be like, yes, this is right, you're wrong. And I'm going to go, holy shit, I've been wrong my whole life. Excuse me. I'm off to burn my things.
Yeah.
And
this obviously is a little bit like different when you're talking about some things like racism and stuff like that. Obviously, I'm not expecting you to go and talk to a racist person and find out why they are racist, because they are just wrong. Yeah. Like, you can try and convince them and give them your point of view, but you don't need to listen to theirs.
There are certain people who won't take the other side. Yeah. And people like, particularly racists, homophobes, people who are like that won't hear the other side. Black Earth certainly won't. But the problem is you can't therefore be like, well, that shows they're wrong. Yes, they are wrong, but that's because we are surrounded by all opinions.
Yeah.
You expose yourself to as much information as possible. The people with the narrow mind who only surround themselves with the people with the same opinion, they're never going to change.
No.
They're never going to give themselves the opportunity to see anything from the other side. So there's not too much you can do for those people.
Yeah.
But what you can do for yourself and everyone around you is to make sure you expose yourself to this information. Don't be an asshole and just go, I like this thing, therefore my thing is right.
Yeah.
And I will jokingly tell people I don't like them if I don't like my favourite movie, but I will never expect everyone to like the same thing I do.
Yeah. I think an important note about this has been a very long episode as well, but woo-hoo, just like one last thing before we plug socials and end this. Don't be afraid to get critical with your friends. Like, me and Becca have just spent the last 70 odd minutes being critical with each other about something that Becca enjoys, and, you know, maybe in the future we'll find something that I enjoy and Becca wants to dissect. Like, if J.K. Rowling hadn't have been an absolute arsehole, we probably would have dissected that. But hey,
I mean, yeah.
I'm not going to defend that. So
no, because you've looked at all the opinions and you know that you don't agree with her.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah. But you know, maybe in the future we'll find something else, and it's something that I enjoy, and something that Becca doesn't enjoy, and we'll dissect it that way.
Yeah.
It's just that this is something that we have spoken about before, and it was a jokey thing, and people seem to want to know why I didn't like Tolkien.
It's been a non-running thing that Becky doesn't like Tolkien, and I am quite a hardcore Tolkien fan.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, I actually have a Tolkien tattoo on my arm. So shockingly, she was never going to convince me that off, because otherwise I'm going to have to get the cheese grater out and scrape my arm.
Yeah, please.
And
do that.
I'm afraid you have not won. I'm not scraping it off. I'm going to keep it and treasure it. Anyway, so
if your friends don't have this kind of discourse with you, then they're probably not friends that are worth having around, because the second...
I should be able to do this.
Yeah, the second that everybody is like, oh yes, my opinion is the only opinion that matters and is valid, you stop being able to communicate to anybody else, and there is never going to be a person who completely agrees with you on every single point. I mean, even in the last episode, there were points that me and Becca disagreed on.
Because
but it doesn't mean that we're
different
not
people.
Friends.
Yes, we're different. You know, we are not carbon clones of one another. If
even
we were carbon
people
clones of one
we
another,
are.
We'd agree with everything.
Yeah.
But having someone who exclusively agrees with everything you say is annoying.
Mm-hmm.
I like finding out that people don't like the same things I do.
Yeah.
And I like to be like, well, this is my reason why I like these things. This is my point of view. And sometimes people go, okay, I can see that. Or they go, no, it hasn't changed my mind. I mean, the main thing I do is, you know, this is movies. I love showing people movies that I love. Sometimes people like them, sometimes people don't. I'm not going to bite people's heads off if they don't like them.
And I'm sure that there are people who will be listening to this who disagree with both of us at the same time, and that's okay. Tell us your reasons why you disagree with us. Tell us why you agree with some points and not the others, or why you disagree with all the points. But I think that all of us, including me and Becca, can look at the points and discussion that we've had and agree with things that both people have said. There's nothing that, like, you know, either one of us has said that is untrue because they are opinions, but it's also just, oh yeah, I can see why, you know, like I said at the very beginning, Tolkien is a world builder and I'm never going to take that away from him. And Becca has said, yes, his language is incredibly flowery.
Yeah, I admit this. Anyone who is a Tolkien fan knows that Tolkien likes his words.
And if you disagree with that, I'm sorry, but you are wrong. There is no way on this
go
planet.
Back and, go back and read the books and realise that there is a page describing a tree. But if it didn't take anything away from you, for you, then great. That's fine. It can for some people. I'm not going to tell those people off. Shockingly, after this episode has ended, me and Becky are not going to suddenly be like, I hate you now.
Yeah. And you'll see us back here for episode 13.
Yes, and 13 is going to be really fun because we're going to talk about comics.
Get your
quick,
comics
let's
out.
Quickly end.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about, so as we just mentioned there, next episode will be about comics. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun. And after 13.5 will be about myths and legends.
Yes, we're going to go back to them, but we're going to focus a little bit more on the things that we didn't cover, like vampires, werewolves, that kind of thing.
We're going to do the more famous
mainstream.
Yeah, because we went a bit nuts with Old Spring Hill Jack.
Yeah, we did. So remember that we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We also have our Discord and we also have our Twitch for when we do our next live episode, which we're discussing. It's going to be fun. We're going to do it a little bit differently. It won't be an Ask Me Anything. It'll be an actual live episode so you can see our frantic discussions.
You get to see how much we wave our arms around. For everyone that saw that live episode, they did get to see me go like this.
Yeah.
I became a blur by the end of it because I wouldn't stay still for my camera to focus. So
don't forget to check us out and join the Discord. Let us know how you're all getting on. And I hope you're all staying home and staying safe. Remember that we love you and you are always welcome to talk to us if you need to.
And the Discord, because we have a lovely little community there.
We do.
Everyone is nice and supportive of one another. We do have a little bit that is if you need a little bit of help or if you just want to complain about something, if you've just had a bad day, drop it in there and we will all spam you with love and cuddles. It's a safe, appropriate distance.
Yes. 2 meters or something.
Yes, 2 meters and all that.
So,
but
on that note,
we will talk
at you in the next one. That was how I wanted to end.
Anyway, right. Yep. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.